Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. On the political left, we have Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and listeners, so glad you're tuning in.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
Yeah.
I want to just tell the listeners, we've got Shireen here with these golden boots that were made for walking.
They were made for walking. It was just so gray when I woke up this morning, and I sometimes like to
It's a beautiful spring morning.
A personal act of resistance is getting dressed in bright clothing.
There you go.
I love it. And I just spent 3 or 4 days out in the Red Rock. Maybe that explains my sort of strained voice.
Oh.
Spent the night in a tent at 32 degrees.
Burr.
But you got to love Utah. Red Rock, I'll be skiing tomorrow.
I envision you roughing it in the Marriott.
Yeah. Nope. I was in the San Rafael Swell in a tent. Hey, but Super Tuesday is come and gone, and we are left now with Biden.
Super for some, not so super for others.
Biden and Donald Trump as a rematch in November. So many ways to talk about this. Let's just first talk about what happened with Nikki Haley dropping out.
Yeah, so
suspending her campaign.
Yes, and we learned from Marianne Williamson that you can unsuspend your campaign on a whim. So I think at this point we are seeing that Nikki Haley has only won one state, Vermont.
Vermont and the District of Columbia.
Every other state and many a great proportion went to Donald Trump. So the day that we're recording today, she came out with a speech. And Natalie, I know that you gave it a listen. What do you have to say about it?
I loved it. It was short and to the point. I think the highlight for our listeners is that she basically said, I'm going to keep speaking for the things I believe in. And then she enumerated those, and it was the debt, limited government, a dysfunctional Congress. She expressed her support for term limits. Thought that was interesting. And then her real strength, standing by our allies in Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. And then she said this, John, let's get your comment. She said, we must turn away from the darkness of hatred and division.
And we need to.
Yeah,
we need to.
Yeah.
You know, America is supposed to be that shining city on a hill. We should be setting an example for the world. And our, you know, we can battle and disagree, but in terms of how we've engaged, it does not bode confidence for countries around the world when they look at us.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really liked in her speech, to read the little part about her mother, first generation American.
She said, just last week, my mother, a first generation immigrant, got to vote for her daughter for president only in America.
Just highlighting the American dream. The
yeah,
power
beautiful.
Of the American dream. And she also highlighted, going back to your comment about Congress, that Congress is full of followers and not leaders.
Okay. Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. Because another quote, she quoted Shireen Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady, who said, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. That was a little bit of a little hit to MAGA, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think that's right. And really, what we are seeing largely in Congress, I believe today, Mitch McConnell, who in many ways has kind of indicated that he's deeply out of step with his own party and has expressed deep concerns about Donald Trump, endorsed him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that this is, I think that this is a problem with our party politic kind of broadly, that people really aren't largely independent thinkers, and there are a handful, I think, in our state legislature and that we see in other roles, but that can be persuaded by good arguments or good policy. But largely what we have are people following an ideology that is sometimes really disconnected from the core values that they say they espouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, we tell folks to go to their political corners, basically. Team R, Team D.
Sure.
Regardless, we'll celebrate whatever they say and forgive any of their sins regardless, rather than saying, okay, is this really what we believe in? Are these really our principles?
And is this how we want to live? Right.
I'm a big fan of David Brooks, columnist in New York Times, but on February 8th, he wrote this great column called Trump Came for Their Party but Took Over Their Souls.
Yeah.
I encourage our readers to read that. It's terrific.
Interesting. What did you think of the Utah dynamics? I know they're still counting the votes from our Republican caucus, our presidential preference. It looks like Trump is going to carry Utah, but I think it was closer than most people expected.
Huh.
What did you see?
I would love to see that, because I'm a huge Nikki Haley believer. I think she represents what's wonderful about the Republican Party and what's wonderful in America. I thought that the Republican caucus fiasco was abhorrent. This is democracy. This is people's time. These are people's preferences, their votes. And they put up such a huge bar, a barrier to entry to participate with lines, with time certain, with a presidential preference poll when we move to a primary and we love this mail out, mail back.
Yep.
And I just think it stifles participation. It's not representative. I know, John, that people talk about how great it is to have the in-depth of a caucus discussion. I love the discussions. Go for it if that's what you like, but don't make it be that to vote.
And this is one of those things. I know the party leadership was hoping that this would showcase the caucus and that it would be really good and powerful experience with lots of presidential candidates and people coming out to be involved. Because from my perspective, when more people are involved, the caucus convention system goes better. Mm-hmm. And so they really wanted to get that. I know yesterday there was various tech issues. Meta, Facebook was down. I ran into issues with Google and even with my phone yesterday. And I was told that at various precincts they were having tech problems and stuff. And so,
yeah
what they were hoping to showcase as a great experience backfired.
Yeah.
Did not go well in many locations.
I just have to note this quote that was in the Salt Lake Tribune because I just found it to really capture what happened. A person who tried to attend a GOP caucus said, "This is the stupidest thing I've ever been in. It was a pure waste of my time." And that kind of disincentive around participating in democracy is, I think, at the core of the rot that we have in our system. Mm-hmm. When people want to show up and participate and it is increasingly difficult for them, whether that's a product of partisan gerrymandering or a poorly run system, a poorly run caucus night, those ultimately result in the people who have kind of the biggest axe to grind or the most time on their hands to just wait it out for their ability to participate. Democrats in this state, we had ballots mailed out for us on our presidential primary. You were able to vote by mail or go vote in person at, normal kind of voting hours. And then we had our caucus night as well, which I participated in and have to say it was lovely. Marginally, not much worse than last year. Certainly not as big as our Bernie years here, but had a number of people.
Feel the burn, baby. Feel the burn.
I still feel it. Had some people coming out, in our community, met some neighbors, which was great. But I really agree with you, Natalie, on this issue that if you are not able to, for reasons of childcare or work or other reasons, it's really difficult to make it out to these nights.
Yeah.
And I know they had tried to, we had absentee voting and other things like that to try and make it. And the hope with pre-registration was to make it, when you checked in, really quick and easy. And it didn't quite go as smooth as they were hoping.
I knew I was going to be out of town. I did not attend. I've watched the news coverage, but I did do a, what do you call it?
Absentee.
Yeah, I did an absentee ballot. Found it incredibly tedious.
The process, not the ballot, but the process.
Yeah. You had to know where to find it. You had to get an email. You had to print it out. You had to sign it. You had to find someone to go deliver it for you.
You had to photocopy your ID.
Yeah. You have to, sign over the seal. And I was thinking to myself, what person who's a senior is going to have all this technology around them?
Yep.
What millennial is going to have a printer at their home?
Yeah.
What if you don't have someone that you trust to carry your ballot in?
And what if you're blind?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I like this. I think of democracy as something very fragile. It's not this football that you throw around. And when they mess with how you vote and put up bars to voting, I think that's dangerous to our system.
Yeah. Now, one of the key things, and I've had this complaint, I don't think the taxpayers should be paying for the nominating process. So the one thing I do like is for the Republicans, they paid for their nominating process, unlike the Democrats who, the state taxpayers, the county taxpayers were paying for mailing out the ballots and stuff like that. I think when it comes to nominating processes, the parties should be responsible for their process and cover the cost of that process, whatever that process might be.
I think access to entry to be able to participate means that that is a well-funded government function. Access to democracy, I think, should be invested in.
Yeah, I'm a limited government person.
But on general elections. But if this is your nominating process, that's your thing.
Yeah, and I'm sort of like, pay now or pay a lot more later.
Yep.
And when you are playing with fire and have these private parties do what they just did to people who want to vote, I think that's a really good deal for government to spend money to get people engaged.
Yeah.
Then we should step away from what we do when it's no longer a nominating process and it's just a general, election kind of activity. I just don't like the idea that they want to claim they're private, but then they want a bunch of taxpayer benefits.
So mm-hmm. you're the one who claims they're private because ours is not. The Democrat process is open. Okay.
Well, your party claims they're a private party.
We let unaffiliated voters, Republicans, if they would like to participate in our caucus night, if they would like to become delegates, we allow that. Your party does not.
Yeah, but your party determines their rules and my party determines my rules. Yeah.
Right. Hey, let's do one more, sort of national big news event. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled that Trump can't be barred from the ballot.
Unanimous.
Over January 6th.
Yeah, what they said is the states can't bar President Trump from being on the ballot. So wanting a uniform thing, the way the 14th Amendment was written, the Congress can pass laws, but the states are not empowered to do things absent Congress acting. And so Colorado and other states can't take Trump off the ballot, whether they want to or not.
Shereen, what did you think of the three liberal justices concurring on this?
So this makes sense to me, mm-hmm. honestly. Okay. And I do think it's a little bit of a backstop. I think if we want to think about countries that have fallen into really troubling autocratic regimes, mm-hmm. I do think this kind of unanimous decision is actually good. It shows some functionality. I do have to say there are parts of this that make sense to me, these kind of one-off decisions. I think that this is something Congress should have addressed when we had the insurrection on the Capitol. They chose to kick that can and mm-hmm. kick it to the courts, and now we're in this kind of cycle of, I think, unending disaster, really, around President Trump being back on the ballot and probably likely to be the Republican nominee. There are solutions to this, but I don't think these one-off decisions from states is how it should be done.
The interesting thing will be what happens when it comes to January 6th, the certified the election. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this ruling was about the states.
Yeah.
This was not about Congress. Right. Well, and Congress has the ability to cure, you know, this or not cure it. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, there was an article a week and a half ago or so, which was talking about some Democrats. If Trump wins, they do not want to certify the election on January 6th. And what does that mean?
Talk about playing with fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, we'll talk some more. We got lots of further conversations. Stay tuned, everybody.
Shereen Gourvani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. And it's time to talk about public issues that are interesting. And I got to say, before we leave MAGA and Donald Trump, can we talk for a minute about President Trump talking about ridding the party of the Romneys?
Which Romneys is he referring
this
to?
This hits home
all
in Utah because we've got, you know, a Senator Romney who is smart, articulate, a great leader, and ridding the party of the Romneys. Wow.
And his niece, who was the National Party chair, Ronna McDonald.
Yeah. Gone. So who is the
chair
now?
What a turnaround. What a turnaround.
Trump installed.
What's it, his daughter-in-law?
His daughter-in-law. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
I'm not a Ronna fan. I think she improperly engaged in various activities that I don't think she should have been doing. But,
You're like good with a president putting his kids in the White House?
No, not good with that.
Okay.
Not good with that either.
All right.
He's basically saying that our duly elected senator, you know, is to be, you know, tossed out.
Yeah.
And I think Utah shouldn't stand for that. So.
Well, it's clearly a debate about, if you will, kind of the Reagan vision of America, the Romney vision of America, the Trump vision of America, and what does that look like and stuff like that. And there's a lot of, you know, dynamics when it comes to that kind of debate and discussion and what does the future look like. You know, there are various folks, and I've mentioned before, you know, the Trump, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore dynamic is also similar to the Bernie Sanders, feel the burn and stuff. And there are reasons for people to feel upset with a system that's stacked against them.
Yeah.
Because there are various aspects where you look and see it does look like it's stacked for political insiders or the wealthy class to the disadvantage of the everyday men and women.
Sure. But then I just have to say, like, when you look at somebody like Trump then getting elected and getting into power, what we see are tax cuts for billionaires. And when we think about the kinds of things that we heard, I mean, the promises of a sort of more progressive Bernie Sanders vision of America is one where everyone has health care. So the ultimate outcomes of this are fundamentally
different. And tax breaks for billionaires and wealthy individuals for EVs or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I will tell you what, though, at the end of the day, what people got from Trump was fundamentally different than what the kind of anger that was tapped into. When I talked to Trump voters, because I was out on the campaign trail that year running for Congress, people were struggling to access health care. They couldn't afford repairs to their roofs on their homes. They couldn't afford, like, just the basic things of life. And they were on the edge of being kind of interested in me and my politics and supporting Trump. So there's an overlap there for people who are getting screwed by the system over and over again in this country.
And yet right now, when you look and poll, and there was a poll that just came out a few days ago that asked people how they felt about the economy relative to Trump when he was in office and Biden today. And overwhelmingly, it was they liked it under Trump.
Sure. And they have forgotten the pandemic largely. And frankly, we kind of have collective amnesia about Trump.
And can I remind you that one in every $4 circulating in the economy during Trump's time was stimulus money?
Yeah.
Of course you like that.
Yeah, that was great.
You just borrowed money from the future to have consumption today.
Well, let's talk about local issues.
I have to do this. The David Brooks column that I mentioned, this is some of the ways he summarizes it. Compromises for suckers, entertainment over governance, foreigners don't matter, lying is normal, and America would be better off in a post-American world. Oh. That's his critique of Trumpianism.
That resonates with me.
Okay. Legislative session.
So
what do you
want
to do?
I wanted to ask, you know—
Is it over? Is it over?
It's over.
It is. I took vacation. Yeah.
Natalie, I think when I think about all of the really interesting things that the work that the Policy Institute and that you do in this state, I feel like you're often at that kind of high level, mm-hmm. themes, big picture, right? Mm-hmm. What is going on? Can you tell me just some things that stood out to you as core themes of this legislative session? Because I know they're going to be different than what I felt about it.
Well, I mean, I follow a lot what Speaker Schultz has led and what President Adams have led. They definitely looked for reforms in higher education. And very early in the session dealt with diversity, equity, inclusion. So that was a theme. Mm-hmm. The tax cut was a theme throughout the session. They set aside the money, delivered on it. Sports and entertainment is a big theme. And
did you see sports and entertainment when you started the session? Did you know that was going to be a theme during this session?
I did.
Okay.
I did because I knew.
Because I think that surprised a lot of folks.
Yeah. Yeah. What I knew was that now was the moment. You know, these windows open. And so we had to have action. I think energy was a theme, and I'd love to talk about that in future, both sides of the aisle. But if you think about it, energy is a big, big deal moving forward.
Yeah.
And this legislature pursues an all-of-the-above strategy, and they solidified that.
Well, I can't wait to dive deeper into that. But I see some of those. I certainly see those themes. I would say that, you know, when I think about what comes to the top for me, I think about continued government overreach. Mm-hmm. I think about culture war issues being centered as kind of priorities. Mm-hmm. And I continue to see a body that largely feels pretty out of step with Utah's politics generally. Mm-hmm. I find people to be much more moderate than mm-hmm. our legislature has become. And mm-hmm. and I continue to believe this. So I don't know. I'm asking maybe, John, from your perspective, are there a couple things that you thought, if you had to say this is something that you were proud of that we did and something that maybe gave you some heartburn, what would stand out for you?
So probably the things that gave me heartburn, I mean, things we've talked about in the past, which is, you know, we're seeing a legislature that seems to be getting more and more involved in local control, in development activities, you know, the stadiums and so forth. I just don't see that as the proper role of government, especially state government, to get into those activities. And to see over the years a greater shift into that. I deal with the realm, which is, okay, every year they're creating another authority, okay, another special governmental entity. And we always struggle with those things because they usually lack the skills and sophistication and other problems like that. You know, we have enough issues when it comes to, you know, larger counties and cities and helping them make sure they understand the rules. And now every year there's a new authority, you know, Inland Port Authority, Point of the Mountain Authority, Utah Lake Authority, State Fair Authority. Now we got, what is it, the Ballpark Authority, on and on. And so it's a concern, which is, what is wrong that the legislature feels that they have to step in more and more with a heavy hand controlling those type of activities?
Yeah.
Clearly, it was good that, you know, we ended the session as required by the Constitution. We balanced the budget. That's good. I have some concerns that we're taking on debt in a way that it's really state debt, but they're making it look like it's not state debt, so it doesn't count against the constitutional limit. That causes me concern.
Yeah. So some of the things you say really resonate with me. I saw today that Equality Utah put out the guidance on the trans bathroom ban, and it's a 7-page document. And for me, when I think about the fact, like how much time, energy, consternation, and frankly, pain that was inflicted by the decision to prioritize that at the beginning of the session, and to see that we are talking about a 7-page document for individuals to determine where it's safe for them to use the restroom, to me feels so wildly out of step with what everyday Utahns are struggling with.
And I think I got mentioned that my office at the last minute without notice got dropped in there as we're supposed to audit the bathrooms.
Yes.
It's like, seriously, guys?
I saw that there were
That's a good reason not to run for re-election, John.
Yeah. These last minute efforts to try to ban pride flags in schools. Again, there are local school districts that have the ability to have these conversations at a level that I think makes sense. I have to say, I heard Senator Todd Weiler say on the floor that he felt it was, and he did say, an idea not original to him, thank goodness, because it's quite a ridiculous one. And the statement was, you know, that we can have pride flags in schools, but we can't have the Ten Commandments. These are fundamentally different documents, right? Like one would be a religious text and the other is a flag that represents a group of people. I think that there's a real difference in these kinds of conversations. But that to me, honestly, is stuff that I hear on conservative talk radio. So hearing these kind of talking points around these culture issues.
Did you know Shereen listened to conservative talk radio?
My husband's a regular listener in his truck, and when I drive around, it is on. So, because I think it's important to try to understand what people are hearing and try to make sense of how that spills into our local politics. Another piece that I thought was really troubling was this buried in a pretty big education bill was the idea that, or now what is going to be in law, that Utah public teachers' emails will be given to Republican leaders if Cox signs this bill. And I think this is very troubling. Again, these are people, my experience with teachers across the state, certainly in this city, are people who are deeply committed to trying to do the best that they can with the resources they have to help our children learn and grow. And thinking about the, you know, kind of reach into for the for all of our elected leaders to be able to have those email addresses, is that really necessary? Mm-hmm.
Well, they are public information. So there's part of me that's like,
why did we need this?
It's public. You know, why did you need this? Because they were already public and you can already get access to it. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure the need for the law.
I think, you know, this is a bigger issue than just the, you know, public school teachers' emails. But if you think about it, it's as much a leadership quality to know what not to do
yes.
as what to do. And we have to really...
What are you not doing this week? No,
well, you know, there's executive functions and there's legislative functions. And executive functions, you know, they're supposed to, you know, operate government. And when the legislature reaches over and wants to host water summits and speak directly to teachers, it seems to me like they get into the executive function category of our world, and it leads to a lot more government. And I think it's too much government. So I'm looking for the leader that actually says part-time legislators are the way we want to function.
Yep.
And we want to trust and believe in our executive branch and have a partnership. What'll be the real message, something for our listeners to watch for, is does Governor Cox veto anything this
anything.
Session?
I think the most troubling for me was seeing the bill that allows the governor to remove the district attorney from counties of the first class. How many counties of the first class do we have?
One.
Just one. How many?
Which one is that?
Yeah, it is Salt Lake County. Not our only
half the jobs in the state. Just giving you an example.
Yeah. The decision to target and say basically the voters of Salt Lake County, their vote doesn't matter. The governor can remove that district attorney is really troubling. And I have to say, from my previous time on the county council, Simgill's office would come, the district attorney's office would come year after year and say, we know that we have a backlog, that we need more resources. I also know that a person can leave the district attorney's office in Salt Lake County and go make more money in Davis County. It's just a few miles up the road and they're able to do that.
People can leave the AG's office and make more money at the district attorney's office. But one can also question, to what extent is the district attorney actually doing a good job prioritizing the risks that are out there to the public?
I think
sometimes it looks like you're going after smaller issues and letting bigger, more serious crimes go by the wayside.
I think there's
and a concern about prioritization and bad dealing in that office.
A good track record of Simgill's effectiveness is how he is genuinely reelected time and time again by a very purple county. And I think it's troubling. I think what the legislature did is troubling there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's troubling how he runs his office. So
you don't live here.
No, I don't live here. Yes.
But John, we only have 20 seconds, but wouldn't you agree that the local people should decide that? That government's closest to the people?
Clearly we have checks and balances. And so, yes, I think local people with certain guardrails.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our discussion today. I hope everybody's enjoyed it. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani, John Dougal. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.